Well, this is one of our fun moments of the show. Conversations with Linda, your phone calls with her when we come back. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Linda Moulton Howe with us, and of course, your questions, your stories. These were a series of amazing interviews, Linda, that you just did.
Thank you. I think so, too. I think they're very important, and I know that in the past, I would have, 10 years ago, had a great difficulty putting this material together for a radio broadcast, meaning I think all of us, even 10 years ago, who have been exposed to so much, that we've all been confused about whether we're dealing with other dimensionals, timelines, something that's here, something that's from somewhere. There's been tremendous senses of we don't know what we're dealing with, and until we do, we really should avoid these kinds of stories. Well, now, to realize that Tom DeLonge is putting together a whole series of material with advisors. They would like to reach the millennial generation, feel that it's the time is right. And you heard in firsthand, Tom said his advisors confirmed the animal mutilations are done by the UFO phenomenon. And it comes back to a question that I've lived with for so long. When I was doing the production work for the TV documentary, A Strange Harvest, I had to keep observing my own reactions and my own internal dialogues with the extremely difficult material that I was handling. And that part of what I think kept me walking along that very difficult path was that the animal locations that I went to, and I've been to at least 100 or more, the lack of blood, the pristineness, the strangeness, sometimes, let's say 100 feet away, you find a very strange marking. The cases where we've done tests, soil compression tests, and been able to confirm, this was one case in Montana where it was very clear this big, heavy, 1,700-pound animal had been dropped. The estimate was, between law enforcement and a physicist, that it was maybe dropped from 200 feet above, hit the ground and bounced, so that where it came and rested, it left this crater, and then its body was in a second position. And these are the kinds of things that add up to what ranchers back in the 1960s, there were ranchers who were seeing beams of light that were coming down out of ovals or circles or multicolored lights in the sky. And I've talked with just a few, not more than four or five, who have said that they have seen an animal either rise in a beam of light or lowered in a beam of light, and then they find it mutilated. Well, tonight, between the advisors and the work that Tom DeLonge is doing, from the firsthand testimony of a man I think is as honest as the day is long, and so does Dr. Bob Wood, who worked with him on editing his new book, to be 93 years old next week. His mind is still sharp as a tack. He is still involved in some pieces of work, and he is, I think, to the best of his ability, describing what he was exposed to from the 40s on, and that perhaps it is looking through the lens of his chronological age that helps give him the confidence to say all of this now that he didn't in his younger years, and that this is exactly the time where we need these pieces put together. Because, George, let me ask you something.
Sure.
Upon hearing his two sections and Tom DeLonge tonight, perhaps for the first time, do you find yourself thinking, oh, my God, that makes sense about what the strange World War II was about?
It makes you think. I'll tell you that. I mean, I've had a lot of different possibilities and theories that I've thought about in my lifetime, Linda, But this, I mean, these gentlemen have poured themselves into this. DeLong is, I don't think he's with 182 anymore with Blink.
I said in that intro, he's now does guitar work and lead vocal in Aliens.
Right.
Or Angels. We've got Aliens on the brain. Angels and Airwaves.
And, he's devoting his career to this investigation, just about.
And I
mean, he's shifted.
And I think it's a solid perspective that the millennial generation, which is 0 to 25, they are already there. They're there.
That's
right.
They're
not at all where the older generations are in terms of doubting the existence of other life forms in the universe. They are already there. So if it is now a very important point in the timeline for that generation to learn facts, because I have always been convinced the more you know, the more you learn, the stronger you are. You're broadsided when you know nothing. And I think it's dangerous to be on a planet where at least the Homo sapiens sapiens know nothing. And whatever is the case, that rancher who is willing to do trade, Lynn Buchanan, the remote viewing that he and I have discussed where he said the universe is teeming with life and that there is trade going on this planet, and that if we could all grow up and be told all of the facts, we could then perhaps join a galactic trade association group. Who knows how exciting this could be as long as we have strong allies that can continue to protect us from things out there that Lynn says are unfriendly, and that is the way the universe is. I think that is also one of the biggest shocks. I've always had a kind of childlike hope and prayer that the universe at the big level, at the Civilization 3 and 4 that Michio Kaku has written about in his books, that there would be no war and no violence and everything would be exciting and growing and evolving, and there would be no poverty and no violence and on and on. I just kind of like hoping that the grown-up universe would be like that.
Go ahead, Linda. Then we'll take some calls.
Yeah, but Lynn says no, that it's that's like the yin and yang symbol means a heck of a lot in this universe in terms of forces that are negative and positive that are always in conflict with each other in this universe.
To the phones now we go. Let's go to Jennifer in Alberta, Canada, first of all. Hi, Jennifer.
Oh, my God, George and Linda, I can't believe I'm actually talking to you. You guys, I've been following for years. George, you're a master. Linda, you are such an investigator. You just go down in nitty-gritty, and I love that because it's just right where I'm ready to thinking. Like, you can't snow me. You can't tell me one thing, and like I see the truth in a different way. I'm First Nations. I'm Dene. I was born in Churchill, Manitoba. My cousins are polar bears and penguins. Now, I was taken away from my family at 6 months old and brought up in white family, army family, so we got shipped around everywhere. But the thing was, both families, when I finally connected with mine, said the same thing. They seen things they couldn't understand, and they didn't want to talk about because it scared them to their skin. I, on the other hand, I'm very curious, so I delved right into it. And the first person, excuse me, George, but was Art Bell.
Mm-hmm.
And it went from there. I was in libraries, or looking on videos, anything. Like that movie with Travis Walton, everything. And the thing I have to say is, there is so much happening. The sightings I've seen, like, I'm not somebody that sits around the house and watches YouTube all day, but there is a few sites out there I do like watching because they're very scientific.
Well, and, they sure are, Linda, aren't they?
Yeah, and last weekend I was in Dulce, New Mexico, to speak at their first Dulce Base conference there. It was a very interesting audience, and some of the speakers, William Bramley, the author of Gods of Eden, was there. At one point, I had 50 people on a terrace wanting to talk with me about their experiences and their questions, about 50 people. And for about 7 hours straight, I was talking with people about their experiences, and some of the Apaches were expressing to me that one of the issues has been that the Native Americans have always wanted to keep this material close to their chest. And that I remembered when I was working on A Strange Harvest that one of the locations was going to be in Dulce, and Gabe Valdez was a police officer then, and he had arranged for me to do an interview on camera for the television documentary with some Apaches who had seen, as I remember, it was very large. It was 100 or 200 feet in diameter, big, glowing craft that had hovered right over their cement plant in Dulce at exactly the time where they were having dozens and dozens of bloodless animal mutilations, and that the Apaches back in 79 said then, it's the Star People. Well, I had hoped to get that on camera. When we got there to the cement place, Gabe came and said he was sorry, but that the Apaches had talked and they had decided that they did not want to risk doing anything that would upset the Star People, and they weren't going to go on camera. And that, to me, is also an insight into some of the dynamics of the humans in various, whether it's a different country or it is a different background, that there is this tendency among some people in some groups to keep everything that they have experienced, even if, as one person said, that they had a non-human walk in their kitchen door. They were writing at a desk. This is in Glimpses, Volume 3 of one of my books. And it was a woman, she was writing, and this being just came in and stood as if wanting her to see, and then just literally seemed to either evaporate or she did not know what happened. She said, it was so startling, and yet, she said, after it occurred, and it was basically harmless, it was almost like, you don't realize we're here, and we are here, and I don't mean you any harm, but I just wanted you to know I was here. She said those words to me when she was talking about it. And don't you have a sense of all the people that you interview on Coast, the part of what we're dealing with on this global phenomena is a kind of sometimes theatric flaunting or showing that it is here and it can do things that we have no comprehension of. For example, a recent article from the Mirror in England was that there were two air traffic radar control people at the time of the December 1980 RAF Bentwaters Woodbridge phenomena, beams, lights, triangle or tripod of imprints in the soil in the forest. And now two of these radar controllers who had never talked before have talked for a documentary upcoming, and they said that they both confirmed radar tracks over Rendlesham Forest moving 120 miles in 8 seconds. Jeez. And I asked an engineer today if he could calculate what that equaled. And you know what the answer was from an engineer?
What did he say?
54,000 miles an hour. And, George, that's about 70 times the speed of sound.
Sound, yeah. That's not bad. Next up, we go to Jeff in Culver City, California. Hey, Jeffrey, welcome.
Hey, George, how you doing? And Mrs. Linda Moulton Howe.
Good.
Yes, sir.
Mrs. Howe, you're one of my favorite guests. But it's interesting that you mentioned early in the program that the legendary Adolf Hitler and his German counterparts, that is, you know, scientists and geneticists, were involved in creating or trying to create, with alien assistance and technology, a hybrid race,
right.
White, blonde-haired, blue-eyed individuals. Here in L.A., there's been a massive influx of, quote-unquote, people who have been gentrifying all over the city and surrounding cities. I've observed many of them, and they seem to be aimless in direction, unable to, you know, visually focus their eyesight, need constant reminding of the most basic and mundane things that normal humans do, and seem to have an unusual thirst or need for alcohol. Huh. The question is this, Mrs. Howe, do you believe that there are factories or facilities throughout the United States which are engaged in alien cloning operations and unleashing hybrid genetically engineered clones on an unsuspecting public? And I'll take the answer off the air.
Well, the hybrid subject, at least in terms of the people who have written about it so far in great detail, Barbara Lamb has a new book out called Meet the Hybrids. Anthony Sanchez did a long interview with a Air Force colonel who talked with him for about 3 days on the record, and then that Air Force colonel disappeared for all time on purpose. His story was that there has been a long-term hybridization program underneath Mount Archuleta up in Dulce, going back for eons, and that he became aware of it when he was assigned in his Air Force career to work at Dulce in upper floors of some sort of a large multi-floored facility that goes underground, and that he understood that there was a hybridization program there and that he was tangentially working on it. Paralleling that story is Rachel's Eyes by Helen Luttrell and Jean Bilodeau. They go back into before 2010, where Helen was the mother of a daughter who had gone blind with young diabetes. And when she got to be college age, she asked very heartfelt that she wanted to see if she could live on her own, with help from her mom and from the college getting her into an apartment.
30 seconds, Linda.
And she, out on the other side of the break, what I'll do is I'll explain why his question isn't quite like what we've heard from eyewitnesses.
Yeah, he thinks they're walking among us now, doesn't he?
Well, that part may be true, but where they're coming from, we can talk about.
Okay. They may be coming from the hollow earth, for all I know. Stick with us. More of your phone calls, those of you on hold, will get to you with Linda Moulton Howe. And don't forget, she's going to be at Contact in the Desert next weekend. Full details at coasttocoastam.com. Welcome back to your calls. Linda, before we go back to more calls, let's let you finish up with Jeff's call from Culver City.
Yeah.
And about, you know, are they with us? Go ahead.
Well, I think I understood that he was asking, could there be some kind of hybrid making or hybridization factories, I think was the word he used, in the surface of the United States or on the planet now. And that's why I was explaining that everything I have been exposed to, Barbara Lamb and I have talked about this and others, is we're dealing with something that is underground, like coexisting with us. And humans, the type that we are now, has only been around in its current form for about 35,000 years. Before that was Neanderthal. So we're very young on this planet. If we're dealing with something that can go into huge caverns, which is what Bill Tompkins was saying, and that the Earth has many big caverns, and apparently we know that Lake Vostok, 2 miles down under the ice, is a gigantic lake. So the idea that over eons there could be a underground cavern living civilization that got here from someplace else, and has mixed and matched genes on the surface, and it's been a laboratory. That's exactly what Bill Tompkins says and others have said. The surface of Earth is a laboratory for mixing and matching genes and creating life, and that we would then, on the surface, we would be looked at as somebody's property to be harvested and used as they saw fit. And so here we come to the question of hybrids. If hybrids have been the story on Earth, meaning the mixing and matching of genes to keep creating stronger and stronger strains, that was an issue that Tom DeLonge told me that his advisors brought up, that sometimes they've gotten the impression that what we are dealing with on this planet are intelligences that are deliberately mixing and matching and sometimes causing problems specifically to see which one of the human types will end up being the strongest. Well, the word strongest, you can be the strongest mentally, you can be the strongest physically, you can be the strongest emotionally. There's a lot of ways to be the strongest. And all of this comes down to we are in our own way. Every evolving life form is usually some sort of a hybrid version of what has passed before. So I don't think that the man's question about whether there is a government involvement in quote-unquote hybrid factories right now producing people walking around, I don't think it's that. I think that there has been very, very long-term, thousands of years of genetic manipulation on this planet for a variety of reasons, as Lynn Buchanan would say, by a huge number of different other intelligences, and that the big thing that we have got to all learn together is that the universe is teeming with life. And why it's silent to the so-called SETI effort to reach out on certain frequencies, that is an interesting question. But I think that the remote viewers, many of the remote viewers, the skilled ones, said back in the 1980s that they encountered all kinds of alien intelligences, the idea that we could compartmentalize and say, this one is this color and this size and has this agenda and so forth, isn't going to work because there are so many different types with apparently so many different reasons to be here that have ranged, as one person in the abduction syndrome told me long ago, honestly, I think that the non-humans I was dealing with, that they dropped in like going on a tourist vacation, and they didn't mean anybody any harm. They were just curious, and then they left, all the way to deliberate mind manipulation, body manipulation, life manipulation by something out there that would fit into the category of any kind of a perception that whole species should be wiped out because they didn't meet some standard. So the bell-shaped curve is a big one.
Big curve, big swing. Let's go to Zach in Phoenix on our Skype line. Hi, Zach. Go ahead.
Hey, great talking to you. Didn't expect to get on, but I'm a long-time listener and big fan.
Thank you, sir.
I just want to say what you just talked about right now with the expanse of the universe and everything we have going on. Of course, we're not the only intelligent life. To think that is to be very self-centered, I believe, is to think that we're the only people in the entire expansion. What I want to talk about was an interesting experience I had growing up that has led to my current belief now. If you don't mind me taking time, it'll take about 2 minutes.
Oh, yeah. Go ahead.
Your show's time. Of course. I'm a long-time listener. I hate when people ramble on, so you know how it is. growing up, I went on a trip to Connecticut, and I saw this deer. It was a resplendent deer, glowed like the sun. And I saw this creature in my backyard maybe once every few months growing up, And I thought nothing of it because I was a child. You know, you don't think of anything of at that time. And a couple months ago, it came to me and it started talking to me, started explaining things, and not anything that was mind-breaking, not anything that was crazy, but it told me to basically look into what was going on with the universe and not everything we've been told is fact. And since then, I'm new, as you can probably tell. And I've started to research and discover things. And one, I want to say what you guys are doing is fantastic. And moreover, I do believe that there's a lot of things that have visited us. I've seen things up in the sky here, you know, living in Phoenix and this part of Arizona, you see things up in the sky that are definitely not planes that are moving in ways you can never explain. But, you know, if you talk about that to neighbors, you sound like a crackhead, you sound like a crazy person, so no one's going to respect what you have to say. Let me
just give you some brief feedback on your glowing deer or elk. In the whole phenomena over decades, one of the constant themes is owls show up, deer show up. People will say that they were out in their backyard and they saw three owls with big black eyes sitting on a fence, and then they have missing time. And then when they go in hypnosis and they go back, those weren't owls, they were non-humans. The same with deer. Deer have often been one of the animals that people, especially when they're kids, will remember a deer coming up to them and the deer starting to talk to them. And then later on, if they do hypnosis, they find out that the deer was a non-human masquerading itself with some kind of cover, and that now you get into the issue of three-dimensional holography that is so sophisticated that there could be a projection of just about anything, and the human mind and eye wouldn't know how to separate it from the world around us, when it could actually be a upload-download technology of stuff from Earth. And so the blazing deer or elk might fall into that category. And so I'm just offering that might have been what you experienced as a child.
Linda, of all the things that you've uncovered and have worked on, what do you find at this point still to be the most perplexing? Is it the crop formations, the mutilations, the ET visitations? What is it?
All of it together. And the fact that I started trying to get to the bottom of animal mutilations 37 years ago this coming September, and that the number of seemingly infinite paths that have branched from starting out trying to find out who, what, why would be killing and mutilating animals and doing it in such a bloodless fashion, and that we had forensics that would show that there was cooked collagen and cooked hemoglobin. And a part that a lot of people don't realize this, when whole hearts can be taken from inside of an animal without any excision anywhere on the chest or the body, then it means that you're dealing with something that is incomprehensible to human science, i.e., for there to be the removal of a 7-inch by 9-inch by 11-inch heart from inside of the chest of a large adult cow and no excisions, then it had to have been molecular extraction. I had that discussion with a doctor when I was working on a strange harvest at Rose Medical Center in Denver, and he helped me compare lasers and electroscalpels and a real scalpel for a scene in my documentary. And then he said, you know, Linda, these photographs that you're showing me, and there is no blood and there's no tracks around the animals, and it suggests that whatever happened, either the animal was lifted away, which that would be fit into the category where ranchers saw beams. It saw animals going up in beams, or have seen beams lowering animals. But that the bottom line would be that something is happening to these animals, not in the pasture, but someplace else, and then they are returned. And he said, "It's all." At that time in 1979, he was a medical doctor in his late 30s, early 40s. He was working right at the frontier of applying lasers to doing all kinds of surgeries, and that's what he was doing. That was his specialty. And he said, "I've always had this idea that it may be in 50 years from now that we would have the ability to do surgery what would be called molecule specific. You would not need any kind of scalpel. You wouldn't be using lasers as we know them, but you would be using frequencies that would match the molecular frequencies of very specific tissue. Gallbladder would have one frequency, liver another, and so forth, and the heart." Well, the idea that he had then is what we have been seeing in the animal mutilations going back to the 1960s.
All right. A couple more calls for you, Linda, and we're out of time. Thomas in La Jolla, California. Thomas, go ahead.
George, thank you for taking my call.
Sure thing, Tom.
Linda, thank you for being the best and the brightest in investigative journalism.
Thank you.
My question, there's a lot of talk about disclosure, okay, of the alien presence. But I've often wondered whether the shadow government, the military, the scientific institutions have been disclosing over the last 70 years through fiction, through the Hollywood entertainment industry, etc. And I cite professor and physicist Michio Kaku, who stated that Stanley Kubrick in the 1960s wanted to bring about disclosure, but knew that the best way to bring about disclosure was through fiction. And so he produced 2001. And there have been other movies, like the 1951 Day the Earth Stood Still and other TV shows and that. But does the shadow government collaborate with the entertainment industry to bring about disclosure through fiction, because it's under the radar, so to speak?
Oh, absolutely. It's been going on. The day the Earth stood still, I have talked with a man who said he knew personally, firsthand, it was a Central Intelligence Agency paid for Hollywood production.
Probably was in those days, Linda.
Yeah, well, I think it goes on today. And that the CIA has had cutout companies that could have spend your next vacation in Hawaii on the bottom floor of a building, and it would look like a travel agency, and the upper floors would be CIA. The same thing works in Hollywood. The CIA has put lots of money into feature films and books and television programs and all sorts of things, trying to condition. That would be my substitution word, not disclose, but condition. Populations to ideas. And there's a big difference between being conditioned and then having all of the facts about an alien presence laid out to us as a world population. That's what we would all like to see happen. That is the category of disclosure or confirmation. And that hasn't happened yet officially. I hope this year that we're finally going to get the announcement that we're not alone in this universe. And I don't know how it's going to come, but I've been told that it will. And then we've got all of the John Podesta, Hillary Clinton, Ask Hillary about UFOs that has been going on for the last several months. And there are all kinds of indications coming from many different directions, not just to me, but to Jim Mars and a few other colleagues that I know, that there is some kind of a time crunch.
30 seconds, Linda.
And we are perhaps seeing that something else is going to force this open. But bottom line, George, as amazing as some of the information seems, I think tonight we heard a lot of truth.
We sure did. Linda, we heard a lot. I'll see you at the Contact in the Desert in Joshua Tree in about a week. So you take care of yourself. That's going to be a fun, great event. For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesour, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burleson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.